Hi everyone, it's Aliza Licht here, your host, and I'm so thrilled to share that my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception, is out now. I hope you'll pick up a copy because personal branding is for everyone. It's for the new graduate starting out, the middle manager looking to level up, the executive who wants to be a thought leader, the entrepreneur starting from scratch. It's for anyone who wants to pivot or transition into something new. Because having a strong personal brand means that your name gets dropped in rooms you're not in, and that you're thought of for opportunities that other people haven't even heard of yet. So pick up a copy, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. Fran Hauser, first of all, you're so someone that I have had in my orbit for so long. I have seen you from afar. I am so excited to have you on Leave Your Mark. And I love everything you stand for, literally. For everyone listening, Fran is passionate about leveling the playing field for women. And she does this through a couple different ways. First of all, through her investing, her writing, and her speaking. Fran, you've invested in over 30 female-founded companies across consumer tech, CPG, media and publishing, and wellness. You are, of course, the best-selling author of The Myth of the Nice Girl, Achieving a Career You Love Without Becoming a Person You Hate, best title ever, which has been translated into 6 languages and was named one of the best business books of the year in 2018 by Audible. And now you've done it again with Embrace the Work, Love Your Career is quickly becoming the go-to for women seeking more joy and fulfillment in their career. And of course, you regularly speak at conferences and organizations to help women build careers they love while staying true to themselves. And much of your work is informed by the 15 years you spent in media, where you rose through the ranks at Time Inc. to become president of digital. So we have a couple intersections back at that time in your career. And in general, I think it's really interesting because not only have you been obviously this force in this specific space, sort of like empowering women and helping them become their best selves, but you also have an amazing pivot story too, from media into startup investing, which are 2 unrelated areas, right? So anyway, I'm rambling because I'm so excited. Welcome to Leave Your Mark. Thanks for coming.
Aliza, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
That's a pleasure. So first and foremost, are you from New York originally?
I am. Actually, I was born in Italy and my parents moved to Mount Kisco, New York, just like an hour north of Manhattan when I was 2. So I grew up in New York, but I was born in Italy. Reggio Calabria, which is the tip of the boot across from Sicily.
Italy, that sounds so chic. I'm just curious, like, why did they leave Italy?
They were actually in a fairly poor part of the country. And, you know, typical immigrant story, they were just looking for a better life for their family. And I'm the oldest of 4. So for me, I think it was really amazing growing up with parents who both owned small businesses. You know, my dad was a landscaper and a stonemason. My mother was a tailor. And I was really helping them out with their businesses at a very young age. Wow. So that was really my first exposure to business. I mean, I was doing invoices for my dad when I was in 1st grade.
What?
So, yeah. Because they were still learning the language and, you know, Italian was their first language. They were more comfortable with it. So I would do a lot of translating for them and literally invoicing, like helping them come up with marketing logos, like all of that at a very, very young age.
As one does. That's amazing.
As one does.
Okay. So you went to Pace University.
Yeah.
You studied business administration. And at that time, like, what did you think you would do?
My first job was actually in public accounting. I spent the first 4 years of my career. I was at Pricewaterhouse and then at Ernst & Young. So 2 of the big, back then it was Big 8, I think. Now it's like Big 3. I have to be honest, when I was in college, you have to remember, first in my family to go to college, my parents really didn't have a network. They really weren't able to mentor me or guide me. It was really all on me. And I honestly think the reason I chose public accounting, it was a couple of things. One was that I always did accounting for my parents.
Right, the invoices. Their businesses.
Right, I already had the experience. And the other was that at Pace, that was really the most lucrative major. Like a lot of Pace graduates ended up going into Big Eight. So it was sort of a combination of those two things. My career has evolved quite a bit since then.
I mean, to say the least. So then you've made two major pivots in your career.
Yes.
So how did you land yourself in media from accounting?
So when I was at Ernst & Young, Coca-Cola was a client of ours, Coca-Cola Enterprises, actually. And I went to go work for them in financial reporting. So I was at Coca-Cola for 4 years doing, you know, more finance, more accounting. And then by then I was like, you know, I really want to run all aspects of a business. Like I don't see myself on a path to being the CFO of a company. I just didn't see that for myself. I really wanted to run an entire business. I wanted to be a general manager or president. And this opportunity came along with Movie Phone.
Do you remember? Oh my God. Yes, I remember Movie
Phone. 777 Films.
Yes.
So an opportunity came along where they were just launching moviephone.com and putting movie showtimes and ticketing online. Like the internet was just getting going. And I decided to leave Coca-Cola, like one of the world's most admired companies, to go to this like little early stage company. And the reason I went, actually two, one was I was really excited about the internet, really excited about it. And the other was that when I talked to the founders, they were really open to giving me exposure to all different parts of the business. Like that's what's great about a smaller company, right? Like you can roll up your sleeves. And so it was such a great decision. Honestly, it was a really risky one, but it was amazing because I went there. Movie Phone then got acquired by AOL. The founders retired, you know, early 30s. So they retired and I ended up eventually running Movie Phone as a division of AOL. So that was like my first general management job, which was really great. And then from there, I went to Time Inc. And I was at Time Inc. for 10 years. People Magazine, InStyle, Entertainment Weekly, you know, really running the digital properties for those businesses.
And that was really at a great time. You know, it's crazy. It's like, they finally got it together and then.
I know. Oh, let me tell you, I will never forget when I was at Movie Phone, right? Division of AOL, and Time Inc. had this job opening that was basically going to be a liaison between AOL and Time Inc. because they were both divisions of Time Warner. And they were looking for somebody who can really bring the two divisions together, create new products and business opportunities because the senior management teams were not getting along for Time Inc. and AOL. They just were not getting along. And I remember looking at the job description and my heart was literally so into it. I wanted the job so badly to work on brands like People and Entertainment Weekly and Fortune. And
nothing was bigger. Nothing was bigger.
But I have to tell you, I was really scared. I really felt like I wasn't qualified. I had no magazine publishing experience and I wasn't going to go for the job because I was so focused on what I didn't have instead of focusing on what I did have. And it took one of my male allies to say, you need to go for this job. You're perfect. You're great at bringing people together. You're great at building new businesses. You have digital media background, you know? So I went for it. I got it. And I ended up being there for 10 years. I mean, it was just amazing. Like I would say my biggest accomplishment there was running the team that launched people.com, which really, it became the world's largest, you know, online media property. It was bigger than the New York Times and CNN. And so that was kind of a big deal, you know,
yeah,
and then I just kept
sure.
getting more and more responsibilities after that.
Wow. After that, did you go straight into investing or write your first book first?
It's a good question. So after that, I went straight into startup investing.
How? Why? Where did that come from?
Here's what happened basically. Because I was running digital at Time Inc., I spent a lot of my time meeting startups because we were always looking at, you know, we had the brands, we had the content, but we were always looking to innovate on the technology side, right? And there were all these startups out there that were innovating. So we were you know, talking to them about partnering with them and sometimes even investing in them. It was the best part of my job. I mean, I just loved meeting the founders, helping them think through their business challenges and their product roadmap and all of that. And I remember having a coffee with Soraya Darabi. I don't know if you know her, Aliza. She was a founder back then. She now runs a venture capital fund, but she was young. She was like in her late 20s, and she was the founder of an app called Food Spotting. And we were having coffee at Le Pan Quotidien, like right outside the Time Life building. And she said to me, she said, "Fran, I have so many female friends in New York City who want to launch businesses, but when they look up, they don't see any female angel investors or advisors or mentors. You could be that person." And so she planted that seed for me. And I was already enjoying that part of my job so much. So I started angel investing on the side while I was at Time Inc. So I just started like dabbling in it. I had to get everything approved by our general counsel.
Oh God.
Everything. So I'll tell you guys the one that got away, Rent the Runway. First investors. And they weren't comfortable with my investing because they felt like it could be a conflict with InStyle. Like InStyle might want to acquire it one day. So it was crazy. So did that as a side hustle, loved it, and then made the jump. And I've been startup investing now for 8 years on my own.
That's amazing. So obviously I can tell from your disposition, you are one of the nice girls. And you basically believe that being nice is a superpower, right? Not a weakness. What inspired you to write your first book?
So my first book, The Myth of the Nice Girl, really came from just all of the mentoring that I was doing, you know, especially younger women, rising leaders in the company. And they would always ask me, you know, how can you be so nice and still be successful? Because there's always been this notion, you know, this myth that nice girls don't get ahead, that nice girls don't get the corner office.
Yeah.
And so it was something that I found myself talking about all the time. And when I looked at the bookshelves, you know, I'd go into bookstores, like literally all of the books were like nice girls don't get the corner office. So I felt like there was white space, you know, there was a pain point. Women were struggling with this. And there wasn't a book out there that could really help them. And I actually started by writing a blog post for Forbes with Denise Rastori on nice girls finishing first. And it ended up going viral. I started hearing from women all around the country. And that really gave me the in and got publishers excited. So because of that, I got my first book deal. The book came out, gosh, April of 2018. So it's been 4 years. But I'm really proud of the book. You know, it's like you said, it's been translated into 6 or 7 languages at this point, including Ukrainian.
Wow.
So, which is amazing. And I love seeing the posts on social media, which has been really great. So that was my first book. And then I knew I needed to take a break because writing a book, it's not just the writing, but then it's the promoting, the launching the book that takes so much out of you. I don't know if people realize like how much of the marketing falls on the author.
Oh yeah.
Right.
I mean, I certainly know. I mean, it's,
you know,
the hard part. I mean, it is hard to write a book, but it's actually really hard once you've written it to get it out there.
Yeah. That's what my agent said. I remember I was so excited when the manuscript was accepted by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And I was like, oh my gosh.
You're like, I'm done. Totally, you're not done.
They accepted it. And then she literally looked at me and said, oh no, now the hard part begins. Now you have to promote it. So it did. It took me, you know, because people were kind of like, well, when are you writing your next book? When are you writing your next book? And I really needed to take a minute, you know, just take a beat. And my new book, Embrace the Work, Love Your Career, which just came out a couple of months ago, the idea for that book came to me really during the middle of the pandemic. I just remember like reading all these articles about the millions of women that were leaving the workforce and the millions more that were questioning their career path and their purpose. And I really wanted to write something for them. You know, I really wanted to create more of kind of a guided workbook. It's very different, the structure, you know, from The Myth of the Nice Girl, which is 60,000 word narrative. This is, you know, it's 4-color, It's got illustrations, there's writing prompts, there's exercises, there's meditations. I really wanted women to feel like they were creating, you know, they were really being the author kind of their own career, you know? And I have to say, it was so much fun to work on because it was almost like working on a digital product from like a user interface perspective, because it wasn't just the words, right? Thinking about like the illustrations and the exercises and the layout. And so it was really fun. Like I felt like I was learning a lot as I was working on it.
Well, that tells me that book three is probably not far off if you're feeling all refreshed on book two.
I know, we'll see. Oh my gosh.
Well, as I had told you, Fran, you know, the Leave Your Mark community is a community for like-minded women who are really just striving to leave their mark, essentially. And they read your book for the book club this month. So we pulled some questions from the book, which I'm going to take you through. And I think the first one, just to frame this for everyone, embrace the work, love your career, is for any woman who wants to design a career action plan, create time and space, know their value, build a team, reflect and reset, and ultimately fall in love with their career. Just wanted to frame that for everyone. So first and foremost, what is the smile file?
Oh, I love the smile file. So the smile file, it's a journal, really, where you write down like whenever you have a win, an accomplishment, somebody gives you positive feedback. Honestly, I'll even write down like if I have a great parenting moment, it goes into my smile file. And it's something that you can look back to when you're feeling like maybe you don't belong, or maybe, you know, there's a little bit of imposter syndrome, or you just need a little bit of a confidence boost. I love looking back at my smile file because it's evidence, right? It's evidence of what I'm capable of. It's evidence that I'm capable of doing great things. And, you know, it can take different formats. I have friends who, you know, will handwrite in their smile file. I have others that do it digitally, you know, on their phone. I have some friends who actually just in their inbox, they have a folder called smile file, and they'll drag emails, you know, into that folder, you know, emails where they're being given positive feedback. So that's the smile file.
I love that. I also think it's really effective to actually, like, sometimes when you're going through something, to have a reference point to be like, wait, I kind of did this already, or I was able to solve this previously. Let me look back and see like how that turned out.
Yes, that is such a great point, because sometimes what I'll do when I'm journaling is not only will I write down like what the win was, but I'll also write down the how, like the process that I used.
Oh, I love that.
Because then you can go back and say, like, for example, there was a time where I had to give a really big speech at Time Inc. in front of like 300 managers, and we had a brand new CEO, and I was so nervous. And I remember looking back on another great talk that I had done, and I had written down the process that I used, right? Because then that makes you feel like, okay, I can trust the process. I used that process and it worked before. It's going to work again. So that's the other part of it. I'm really glad that you brought that up, that I think can be really helpful.
That is such great advice. And you know what? It's impossible to remember otherwise.
It's impossible, because think about how much we do. Think about how much we do at work. It's just so easy to forget.
It is so easy to forget. Okay. Can you talk about some of your advice for introverts in networking and career conversations? This is something that I can't personally relate to it, because I'm like extrovert with a capital E, but I do recognize how challenging it is, especially, you know, in this sort of work from home, like everyone's on camera, all of a sudden we're all presenting at the same time. Like, it is really hard if you're an introvert to sort of be able to network in that way. And I would love to hear what your thoughts are.
So I am an introvert, and
really,
yes, I am. I've always been an introvert. I mean, actually, I think I would say in the beginning of my career, it was really a challenge for me. Like, I really had a hard time speaking up. If I was in a meeting, you know, with a group of people, especially if there were more senior level people in the room, I had a really, really hard time saying anything other than like a throwaway phrase, like, that's interesting, you know, like, but to actually like share like my point of view, my opinion. And my manager at Ernst & Young, Lou Sciarretta, I wrote about him in The Myth of the Nice Girl. I'll never forget after one of those meetings, he actually pulled me aside. And he said, Fran, you know, you're really smart. You're really thoughtful. It's really important that you share your opinions and your points of view in these meetings. Otherwise, you're going to continue to be invisible.
Oh, wow.
And it was so hard for me to hear that, but it was huge. And I have to tell you, I'm so grateful for him. Like that mentoring in the moment, as opposed to waiting until the annual performance.
Sure.
Review, right?
Yeah.
So for the next meeting, what I did was I read the agenda ahead of time. And I picked one thing that I felt like I was really an expert in. And I actually practiced what I was going to say ahead of time. Because, you know, when you practice saying it, you just feel more confident.
Absolutely.
And I did. I was in the meeting and I said it and it was fine. Like it landed well. And what I found was that practice of kind of like picking one thing and making sure that, you know, my voice was being heard, it was something that I kept doing. It was really a technique that I kept using until I didn't have to use it anymore, until I just started feeling comfortable enough to speak up in those meetings. It's almost like building a muscle, you know?
I agree with you. That's a great tip.
Right? Then the other thing that I'll say is, especially with all these like Zoom meetings, I think as an introvert, I'm just better one-on-one with people. So I really make an effort to get to know people one-on-one, you know, even if it's like having a phone call with them, grabbing a coffee, going for a walk, because then I know I'm going to feel more comfortable in a group setting if I have individual relationships with people.
What would you say is the best piece of advice you could give to women who are starting their careers now?
Gosh, there's so much. I know we just talked about this, but the whole speaking up thing is really important. And the way that I would frame it too, because I'm still seeing it, you know, I'm speaking at these colleges, I'm speaking to postgrads, and the men are still like raising their hands more than the women are.
Sure.
They come up to me one-on-one to ask questions, but I would say like, don't agonize or overthink what you're going to say. I feel like that's what we do. We're kind of like going through it in our head because we want it to come out perfectly. And it's just not necessary, you know, like really like just trust yourself and speak from the heart. It will be fine. It's actually more important that you speak up and maybe like stumble a little than not speak up at all. Because the more you do it, I'm telling you, the better you're going to get at it. So I think that's a big one. And then the other thing I would say too is it's just so important to have those mentors and those champions and to build those relationships, because I don't think that I would have gotten promoted as often as I did if I didn't have those people looking out for me. Like I remember back at Time Inc., Paul Kane was the chief revenue officer. He was a huge champion of mine. He had the CEO's ear and he also had access to knowledge. So anytime that there was going to be a restructuring, he knew about it. And whenever there was an opportunity for me to take on more responsibility, like he would always put my name forward, right? So you're not on this career journey alone, like really making sure that, you know, in the book, I call it your dream team, like having those people that are going to promote you, are going to champion you, are going to be sounding boards, are going to open their networks to you. Building those relationships is so important. And I wish that I had done it sooner. Like I feel like I really kind of waited until the middle part of my career to prioritize building those relationships. I definitely wish I had done that sooner.
Now, why is that, do you think?
Why did I wait so long?
Yeah.
Honestly, I never had anybody really telling me how important building out your network is, you know, or like building relationships. For me, it was all about like doing the work and doing
sure.
great work and like just heads down, you know, creating real value for the company. And I was so focused on that. And then I remember the aha moment for me was Pat Philly Crucial, who was the number two at Time Warner. Jeff Bukas was the chair. Pat worked for Jeff. And Pat was telling me and other women that she would do two networking meetings every single day, that that was really the reason, her network was the reason why she had accelerated in her career. And I remember like my jaw dropping because two networking meetings a day, like how could you have the time to do that? But I said, you know what? I could do like one a week. I could set aside an hour every week and I could be really methodical. I, you know, about creating a target list of people that I want to meet and getting the warm introductions. And like, you know, if I do that, that's 50 new people that I can meet, right, over the course of a year. So sometimes you just have to like, listen, you know, like have that conversation. And when she said that to me, I was like, wow, like I was so focused on doing great work, which is also really important, but I wasn't focusing on building out my network. That was a huge aha moment for me. And I have to tell you, I think that also allowed me, actually, I know for sure that building out my network supported me in my transition from media to investing because I had the founders, I had the VCs, I had angel investors in my network, right? Without them, how could I have made that transition? Whereas I feel like a lot of other people who were working at Time Inc., magazine publishing, you know, they didn't take the time to build out their network. They didn't take the time to like really build new skills. And it was really hard for them to transition when the time came.
Yes. And I think to your point, we all were. So I started the magazine side of the business in the late 90s and then I moved over to corporate PR. And I think everyone kind of thought they would have these jobs forever. And you were in your bubble and you knew who you knew and you kind of were just like, that's enough. There's all the people I need to know. Right?
So true. No, it's absolutely true. And honestly, that's what happened to me too. I remember when Pat shared that with us about the networking, I was thinking about my network and I was like, oh my gosh, my network is all media people. It's all people who look and sound like me. We all talk about the same thing. The business model is broken, the advertising, the blah, blah. I mean, so I'm like, oh, how did this happen? How did this happen that my network literally consists of only media people? And that's when I was like, okay, wait, what am I interested in? I'm really interested in the technology sector. I'm really interested in the nonprofit space. Like those were the two spaces that I prioritized. And I really like made it a mission to meet people in those sectors. It was really important to me to do that. I even remember, I don't know if you ever read that book, Half the Sky, by Nick Kristoff and Cheryl Wudun. It's an incredible book. I remember reading it and towards the back of the book, they talk about this nonprofit organization called Global Giving. And I was reading about the organization in the book and basically they were using technology for good. And I became so curious and like intrigued that I stalked the CEO of, of Global Giving and I found her and we ended up meeting and I ended up joining their board. I was on their board for 10 years. And wow. I think it just really shows like being curious, you know, being curious. And if you're interested in something, follow it. You don't know where that path might lead. And like for me, that was a really important part of my professional life and just my life in general was the nonprofit work that I did, the impact work that I did during that time.
I think you raise a really good point because it's true. You can get very focused on like, let me network in the industry that I'm in because those are the people that are really important. But you really do need to think about who's on the perimeter of your industry and make sure that you have that cross-functional.
Yeah. And you know, also what I would say too, is that when you meet these people that are, you know, outside of your industry, that could also help you in your current job
because for sure.
You might learn something. You might learn about like a new trend or a new technology platform or something that's going on with consumer behavior that you, you know, weren't really aware of. And that's all stuff that you can bring back to your job. So sometimes like people will say to me, oh, but if I spend like too much time, you know, meeting people outside of my company, like I almost feel guilty that I'm spending that time doing it. And it's like, well, no, because you're by doing that, you're investing in your career and you're also investing in your company.
Absolutely. So you talk about distractors at work. You talk about those extra tasks that women are asked to do, generally more often than men. How does someone who wants to, you know, wants to make their boss happy and wants to do a good job, how does someone handle those requests? And how do you identify them as distractors?
Yeah, you know, for me, like, as an example, I realized there was one point in my career where I was always the one like taking notes in meetings. And, you know, I did a good job. I was very thorough, right? And so it was just like, oh, Fran, you know, she'll take the notes. And what I had to do, because one day, like, I realized, I'm like, wait, is that really what I want to be known for? Do I want to be known as the note taker? Like, it's totally fine to do that like every once in a while. But so I remember just having a conversation with my manager about it and saying, it'd be really great. Like, we have this big team. Why don't we take turns? Like, because it wasn't just taking notes. It was like a bunch of things like that. And it's like, you know, I think it would be really great if we all, you know, took turns. And she was like, oh yeah, sure. Because you know what? They just got used to me taking the notes. So if I hadn't said anything, that would have been the expectation and I would have just kept doing it. And it's like, look, you want to be a team player, right? So it's totally fine to do it every once in a while, but it can't all fall on you. Because it goes back to, what do you want to be known for?
Yeah, right? For sure.
Question, what do you want to be known for? What's the value that you're creating for your organization? Like, what are you the go-to for? What makes you indispensable? Like, that's what you want to be focusing your time on, right?
100%. So going back to nice girls, I mean, I think being nice is a superpower for sure. But why don't enough women know this? And why are there so many mean girl bosses?
I think a big part of it is culture and just sort of this idea that, you know, in order to get ahead, you have to like take on this girl boss, you know, mean girl persona. And that's the only way that you're going to be able to compete, you know, with men. And I have to tell you, I don't buy it. I really honestly don't. I believe, and I look at my career and I think about the people that have worked on my team who have followed me from company to company to company to company. And they do that because they really love working with me. You know, they know that I have their back, that I really care about them, but that I also have very high expectations and that they're going to learn a lot when they work with me. And that's the thing. Like, you don't have to choose between being nice and being strong. Like, I really believe that I'm both. Like, I'm a strong operator, you know, and when we kick off a project, I'm very clear about, you know, this is what success looks like, right? This is the vision. These are the metrics. And this is how we're going to work together, you know, to get there. And I just really don't think you have to choose between the two. And I think the most effective leaders actually do lead with both qualities. They're nice and they're strong.
Oh, I agree. So we're going to have to make sure more people know about that.
Yes.
Definitely needs some PR. Okay. Yes. Talk to us about the perfection trap.
The perfection trap. So this is something that I think a lot of women struggle with. I've definitely struggled with it. I really noticed it when I went back to work after my first maternity leave, because I was feeling really vulnerable. And I remember, like, I was just saying yes to everything at work, even though I had this baby at home, like, because I wanted to show that I could do it all, which was crazy. And then I realized that I really had to change the way that I was working. And one of the things that I noticed was that, for example, I was spending so much time making internal reports look pretty. You know, these were just reports that were internal. They were going to senior management. They were going to my peers. Or like, if I had a new business idea and I wanted to talk about it with my boss, I would actually put together a PowerPoint deck. Like, instead of just going in and having a conversation with her and saying, hey, here's what I'm thinking. I think this could be a really big business for the company. This is why. So I had to move away from this idea of like everything having to look beautiful and everything having to be like tied up with a bow. And really, really shift my focus more to the content and the substance. Oh, wow. And that was a huge, I can't even tell you, Aliza, that was like, it was just huge for me because it ended up saving me so much time. so much time. So this is something that I talk to female founders a lot about. You know, like if they have a meeting with an investor, because this has happened to me as an investor where I have a meeting with a founder and there's follow-up, like I would rather get the follow-up quickly from the founder.
That'd
like,
have to be perfect.
Send me that email, right? Within like a day. Because I've had people like 3 weeks later, I get the follow-up from them. And it's because they wanted it to, you know, to be perfect. And speed to market, it's important. Like, look, you don't want it to be sloppy, right?
But no, of course not. But I get what you're saying.
Content, you get, right? It's just, it was a huge, 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 huge thing for me when I realized that. It just ended up saving so much time.
I love that advice. You know, it's an underrated time suck because you don't track it, right? You're not like clocking yourself how long something takes, but it is, I mean, so true.
Oh, isn't it true though?
Powerful.
See, that's the thing too. Like when you talk about underrated time sucks, right? Because we can look at our calendars and we can look at our to-do lists and see everything that's on there. And we can make smart decisions about maybe things that shouldn't be on there, things that maybe we should move to our to-don't list, you know, that we can do. Then there's all this other stuff, the distractors that aren't even on, they're not on our calendar and they're not on our to-do list.
Yes.
Oh, do you see, so like true. It's identifying what those things are, like the perfectionism, right? Like identifying what those things are so that you can create more time and space to really work on the things that matter. Like here was another big one for me was like, I was always the office therapist. So people would just come into my office and they would just start talking to me about their problems. And that's the downside of being nice, right? Because the warmth, the empathy. So I literally had to create office hours.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
90 minutes. That's what I'm going to spend every week. It's 90 minutes. And it's like 3 20-minute sessions because I like having my little 10-minute breaks in between. I still do this. I have a Calendly. It's Tuesday, 10 to 11:30, 3 20-minute sessions. That's my give back time. That's like a favor. That's like if somebody's looking for a favor, if a founder wants feedback on their pitch deck, and I know I'm not going to invest in this business because it's not part of my investing thesis, but it's my, you know, I feel good about like 90 minutes a week, that being, you know, that's my give back time, but I'm setting boundaries around it, right?
Like, oh, I'm so stealing that. I love that.
It's so important. And then you just send the Calendly link. That's what I do. I just send it. They get the time. And it's also great because it's like, it's 20 minutes. And I always say, please, you know, come prepared with, you know, specific questions that you'd like to ask me.
I'm so glad you say that. I am amazed at how many people don't and how many people ask questions that they literally could have Googled the answer to.
I had a coffee with someone the other day as a favor to a friend of mine.
Was it within the 90-minute time block?
It actually, honestly, this one wasn't, because it was like one of my best friends and this woman was really struggling and she's like, can you please, you know, it was like one of those.
Yes.
So I did a coffee with her and she started the meeting asking me to tell her about my career.
Oh no.
That was the question for me to tell her about my career. And it's exactly what you said. It's like, you could have Googled that. And I made an exception for this person because there were extenuating circumstances. Like, this person was really struggling. And so I made an exception to my 90 minute, which I rarely do. And then that was the first question I got. Did not feel good.
You know, I think people think that, okay, on one hand, it's pure laziness. They just didn't do the homework. But on the other hand, I do think they think that you want to just talk about yourself, but really your goal is efficiency. Right. So it's like, you're happy to help, but you just want to be laser focused. I'm like, what is the thing that you actually need an answer to?
Really specific. Like, what is it that you're struggling with? You know, if you're a founder, like, what are the 3 or 4 things that you really need help with right now?
Yeah. And then you make them prioritize themselves, which is great.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. People right now, I mean, the world as we know it is just bonkers, right? What would you say to people who are just, they're not happy with what they're doing. They don't know what else they could be doing. Like, they're just lost. What is the first step in sort of repositioning your mindset?
Yeah. I really think the first step is to reach out to people and to have conversations and to let people know that you're struggling and that you're really feeling stuck and that you're thinking about maybe doing something different. And this is too where the curiosity comes in. Because especially like if you're really feeling stuck and you really don't know what to do, it's really helpful to talk to other people across a wide range of industries and even seniority, you know? And also you want to put it out there that you're kind of thinking about doing something different. You want to be in people's heads, you know, so that then when I hear about a job opportunity, I think of you and I bring it to you and I recommend you for it. What I find so often happens is when people get like this, where they get really stuck, instead, they like isolate. They don't know what to do and they just like kind of let it fester. And so I really feel it's so important to not do that and to really get out there to talk to people. When I was feeling at Time Inc., you know, I had been there for 8 years and I was like, okay, I'm like itching to do something different. That's why I met with Soraya at La Panne Quotidienne, you know, outside of the Time Life building. She was the one that planted that seed in my head about startup investing. I don't know if I ever would have come up with that on my own. I was meeting with a lot of people during that time, you know, like I was meeting with people in the nonprofit space and technology. I was just meeting with lots of different people because I was trying to think about like, what is it that I want to do next? So don't isolate, don't go like inward. I think it's really important to put it out there and talk to people, listen to them, be curious, be open. Actually, do the workbook, do Embrace the Work, Love Your Career, because there are so many questions in here and there are so many writing prompts that will really help you in terms of the reflective, you know, the reflection kind of work. That's one of my goals with this book, right? Is to help you get unstuck.
Yeah, for sure. And you did an amazing job. If you are pitching a really big idea and you're super uncomfortable, what is a way to sort of get your head in the right space to like really go for it?
I really like to think about the opportunity and just like how big of an opportunity this is. And if I can really believe that, that it's a big opportunity, it's just going to be so much easier for me to pitch it. So like, I will literally even think about like from a numbers perspective, you know, like what's the market size for this opportunity? Like how big of an idea is this and how big of an impact can it make? Because it's really about getting into the mindset of you're presenting something that could be a really big deal for the organization that you work for, right? So you almost have an obligation. I actually think you do have an obligation to pitch it, right? Because it's going to make a huge impact and difference. So that's sort of the way that I think about it. Like, it's almost like it would be a missed opportunity if I didn't present it.
What do you do on days that you are just feeling like nothing is going your way, or maybe you're disillusioned with what you're doing? Like, obviously not every day is the perfect glossy day, yeah, right? So how do you keep yourself sort of on track?
You know, when I'm having days like that, I find that I really have to just take a step back and I have to like go for a walk, or literally like listen to a book on Audible, or like what, you know, whatever it is that just gets you into a better headspace. Because I just find it's really hard to be productive when I'm feeling like that, you know, when I'm just feeling like, oh my gosh, nothing is going my way. Like literally, like what else is going to go wrong today? I feel like I'm having quite a few days like that recently. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's like end of school year with the kids, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's definitely like, challenging too.
It's challenging. And like with the transition and, but honestly, that's what I do is I just have to take a step back and I just have to like walk or breathe, you know, just do some breathing, listening to music, listening to a book, just reset, you know, just reset.
I think it's also really interesting that you have meditation sort of integrated into this. Will you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, the meditation part was really important to me. You know, at the end of each section, there's a meditation and there's a coloring break. And I know for myself personally, I love closure to things. And I feel like I would just plow through this book, honestly, because I just like, I'd want to just get it done. So I purposely put meditations and coloring breaks at the end of each section, just to remind everybody how important it is to pause and reflect before you move on, right? You just finished this section, take a minute. And hopefully with the idea that this is a practice that you can actually integrate into your life, not just with the book, but this idea of pausing and reflecting. It's so important.
I think that's brilliant. I honestly think also it's so smart because the exercises themselves, this sort of like deep reflection and really like soul searching to figure out what you want to do or achieve or whatever, it's hard and it's like draining to like actually come to face with what your thoughts are.
Totally. It is draining because I'm asking questions that maybe you've never really asked yourself, you know? And so I am asking you to do some soul searching and to really do the work. In order to love your career, you got to do the work, right? Because I feel like many of us get into this autopilot mode and we are not being intentional about the work and our career. So that's the purpose of this book, is just to get you to take a step back and really reflect on like, what is it about my work that I love? Like, what is it that's not working for me? What do I want to do more of? You know, what do I want to do less of? For some people, what I've really loved seeing is that for them, the book has been more about reconnecting with their work, not about finding something completely new, forging a new path.
Interesting.
Like literally realizing, but wait a second, like I've been so focused on all this stuff that I don't like about my job, but actually there is this one thing that I really love and I'm going to see if I can do more of that. You know, can I reshape my job so that I'm spending more of my time there? Because that brings me a lot of joy and it's really fulfilling. And I do think it's important. You know, the answer isn't always to leave and do something different. You know, sometimes the answer is to stay where you are, to reconnect with your work, and maybe just to kind of reshape it a little bit.
That's such great advice. Because you know what? I do have to say, everyone these days, everyone's very precious with themselves. You know, people are looking for the perfect job. There is no perfect job.
There is no perfect job. And look, the grass is always greener, right? Sometimes women will come to me where they've been at a company like 5 years, 10 years, and they're getting that itch, you know, to do something different. And like their gut is telling them they should go do something different. But then when we really sit down and we look at all of the amazing things about their current job, they love the people they work with. It's a really great culture. They're making really good money. You know, like we just start going, and then we look at, okay, let's look at your work. And that's where it's like, okay, so yeah, there's some parts of your work that maybe it's administrative, maybe it's really tedious and it's boring. We're always, always going to have that, right? For sure. But let's think about, you know, can we bring in some other things into your role that will just make it more fulfilling for you, right? But that administrative stuff is always going to be there too, right? Like, and we just got to do it. Got to suck it up.
Everyone does. Everyone does. So Fran, you are doing so much good. You're doing it in two different ways. You're doing it by investing in female-founded companies, and then you're doing it through your words. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark?
Gosh, I think about this a lot. And I have to say, like, if I had to pick one thing, like just from like a legacy perspective, I think it would really be around turning the nice girl notion on its head. Like that's what I would want to be remembered for.
I think that's a great one. And that's why the title resonated with me so much, because it is so something that needs to be turned on its head.
I mean, it's just humanity, you know? It's like you just, it's what you said before, the world is bonkers. And if we had just more people who were compassionate and empathetic and reasonable and respected other people's opinions, all of that, that's all part of just being a good person, being nice, being kind. I know that we can use a lot more of that right now in the world.
We sure can. And I know you also have this great Instagram account, Fran's Bookshelf, which I had to mention.
I'm so glad you mentioned it.
Because it's like amazing. And you know what? I feel like books are so important in the world. So I love that you have this page.
So right before COVID, I was working on opening a bookstore. And
oh, wow.
I had a partner. We had the space. We had the planogram done, like the bookshelves. Like it was so close. And then the pandemic hit. So we walked away from the bookstore, but I started my bookstagram, Fran's Bookshelf, because I'm like, so what can I do? I'm not going to have a bookstore, but what if I just started an Instagram account where I share book recommendations? And it is totally my unicorn space. It's my like creative, like I love, I think I read 70 books last year.
Yeah, I just, wow.
I love, love, love to read. I love it. And you know, who knows, maybe the bookstore will happen one day. Like maybe Fran's Bookshelf will turn into something else. But I love planting these seeds. You know, I love putting this stuff out there, and then we'll see where it goes.
Was the name of the bookstore going to be Fran's Bookshelf?
It wasn't. It was actually going to be Bedford Road Books, because it was in Bedford on Bedford Road. So BRB, Bedford Road Books. But now I feel like I have this like little brand around Fran's Bookshelf.
You absolutely do. I love it. Well, I have a book coming out next year. I hope it's on Fran's Bookshelf.
Oh my gosh, Aliza, I can't wait for it.
Listen, this is so great. I mean, I like I said in the beginning, I have seen your work for years. I have known your name for years. I've totally followed you from afar, and I just love everything you stand for. So thank you so much for coming on. And also thank you for doing what you're doing, because it's really meaningful and you're paying it forward in so many different ways.
This was such a treat. Thank you for everything that you do. Seriously.
Oh my God. Please.
I love, 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 love following you. And I'm so happy that we're now in each other's orbit.
I know, me too. And I'm so sorry I have this horrible cold. It's not COVID, but you know, good old fashioned cold right now. So apologies, listeners, for my nasalness.
Thanks so much for listening to Leave Your Mark, the podcast. If you want more career advice, be sure to pick up a copy of my best-selling book, Leave Your Mark. If you're on Instagram, make sure to follow at Leave Your Mark Podcast to stay up with the latest episodes. And of course, say hi to me at Aliza Licht XO. If you're on Twitter, definitely reach out at Aliza Licht. I would love to hear from you. If you want to subscribe to my newsletter or attend a future virtual mentoring event, go to alizalicht.com for more information. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.